Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Tonight, Better Call Saul season 4 episode 8. Uh-oh, that means we're almost done. We're gonna travel on down to the bayou where Jimmy's got a crawdad in his pants, and there's so much more. There's nachos and there's Germans drinking beer. I can't keep it all straight. Fortunately, the Better Call Saul after show starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, there's only one way to celebrate an episode like this. If only we could have gotten a big brass band to walk right through the studio. And periodically, when we're talking during the episode, Josh in the booth, feel free to just go ahead and crank this back up when you feel like it's appropriate.
Yeah!
Because we're feeling it tonight here on the Better Call Saul.
The Bavarian Boys.
The Bavarian Boys. Also the Bayou Boys.
The Bayou Boys.
We're the Bayou Boys this week. Reunited. I am Christian Black with my boy Al G.
Your boy Al G called me Young Bayou Boy now. He's the Bavarian Boy. I'm Young Bayou Boy, a.k.a. Young Street Life. Okay.
That's right. We all have so many nicknames, and it's only 8 episodes. There's still 2 more, so we got 2 more weeks to try and add stuff to it. Anyway, very fun episode, you know, in that way where you're like, oh, this is really fun. Boy, is it going to get ugly in the next 2 weeks, you know? You're just like, oh, look, people are starting to be happy. Well, that's not going to last now, is it? We will sort of go through the different storylines for the episode like always. Al's got some news a little bit later. But Al, take a moment. Just give us your overall thoughts on the episode before we start breaking it down.
Well, as we know, we've been following the tragic fall of Slippin' Jimmy and his evolution into Saul.
Yes.
But now I am afraid we're getting to see Kim break bad. And I fear there are consequences ahead of her. And really, not just Kim. We've seen this with Nacho as well as we have a guest coming in, Crazy 8. There's all these callbacks and people we've seen before who've all like seen Broken Bad as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that bad things are afoot for a lot of people. But it's all right. You know what? We're going to go ahead and celebrate and enjoy the fun storyline of Jimmy getting on a bus. Let's start. Yeah, a lot of times we save Jimmy for the end, but let's start with the most fun storyline here in the episode. Last week we saw Kim had an idea, and she started buying some arts and crafts supplies. And I don't know about you, Al. I don't know what she was up to. I thought maybe she was making signs for some reason.
Some kind of chart? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
But did I think for a minute that Jimmy was going to take a bus ride and mail thousands of letters? You know, and you see him writing with his left hand, paying other people to write the letters, which I think is nice. And I don't know. While he's taking the drive out to Cochetta, I think I might be saying that wrong. But I don't have a good Cajun accent, so that's...
Help us out down there in the bayou.
Anybody in the bayou, please let us know.
Excuse our bad accent.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. And there'll probably be more throughout the course of the episode, especially when we start talking about Jimmy on the phone, which is amazing. But anyway, I don't know, just not something that I imagined. And the idea that he goes right into that, to the post office, and you can see he comes out with empty bags. He's just sitting there waiting for the next bus to turn right back around. What do you think of Kim's plan, which we'll really break down in a minute, but just sort of what did you think, Al?
Kim's plan is classic, and we always know Kim had a bit of that hustler buried deep inside her as opposed – because, you know, she's done a couple of scams, lightweight scams with Jimmy just for fun, you know? But now we're starting to realize, you know, how much she loves this type of thing. But Jimmy – executes it to the T, complete with, you know, hiring Janetta and Bubba on the bus with the different handwriting and the GoFundMe page. And what I love about Breaking Bad, when they take you down into the minutiae of a scam or a heist or even just a small set piece like this, you know, they take you into every little detail.
Yeah, and Jimmy knows the importance of outsourcing for something like this. You know, he's got the roll of cash for people on the bus. We'll talk about essentially like an acting class worth of people that he hired.
And he gets to use his bank of phones.
He gets to use those phones, you know, and his burner phones. So, you know, he's got to be done with them now, but that's all right. I think it was just perfectly conceived by Kim and really just so well executed by Jimmy. And this is what happens when they're on the same page and they can actually work together.
Clicking.
But
some nice loving at the end. That's what happens, too.
That's what happens. But, you know, it was a little bit surprising, I would say, because you can kind of feel the vibe. It's not going there.
Yeah.
But I think that has a lot more to do with Kim just being focused in the moment. And she's like, until that thing is realized, you know, we see her with the headphones on. Mm-hmm. And she's barely even acknowledging that Jimmy's there. And just like, nah, whatever, you eat. Who cares? You know? And I think that that's just who she is. She needs to get this job done. And the way she reacts when it's all over, doesn't say anything to Jimmy, just manhandles him in the stairwell. Jimmy has no complaints. And that's because she finally can release and can finally, you know, just let out a deep breath. Do you feel like that's the way Kim was processing all this?
I think that's exactly the way Kim processed it. And when she was waiting outside for him at the strip mall where Jimmy's building his, or seems to be building his new office, or looking at a new office, you know, where it's the rodents in the hole in the wall and stuff. Kim is a sexy woman, but she's sexy without trying to be sexy. She still has like that good girl, smart girl thing. But there was something about the way she was leaning against the wall, man. She was smoking that cigarette. I was like, oh, it's about to be on.
Yeah.
She just looked really sexy.
Yeah, and Jimmy's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. In the chat, Super Fromataz says, I thought she was setting up the cop by writing love letters to the cop's wife. Now, that could be that could have been something, you know, some sort of just something that could have been found, but just so much better than that. The just the mass groundswell of support, and we see the judge again, and you can just see how constantly flustered he is. He's like, I don't want a circus. This case doesn't warrant a circus. Figure it out. And you know, the district attorney Suzanne, completely blindsided by, I'd say, all of this.
And blindsided yet not deterred. She doubles down still.
I did really enjoy that scene where she gets her people together, is like, take a look at this. Uh-huh. And then they start making the calls. And, you know, what does Jimmy do better than have a bank of phones? You know, how much do you think he paid those people to be there for the day? Like $20, you know?
That was my question. This is a question for you, Christian, but also for the audience. We love the scam, but for all it takes and all the energy and the phones, and even though Jimmy has a cheap bank of phones, and even though these are just like acting interns and, you know, the stagehands or whatever, spying actors, with the money and the time, did you really think getting Huell off, do you think it would warrant that much time and effort? And maybe I ask that to the audience as well.
Well, I think it's a great question. I do think that it was important enough to Jimmy that he get off, because if Huell felt like he was going to do time, he was going to run, and that was going to be a problem. And they care about him, you know? And so I think, look, all said and done, they did probably spend like $1,000. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what the actual cost of the burner phones is. That's actually probably pretty substantial, but it was money he'd already spent. You know, that's the way that I look at that.
And when you're talking about Huell and how valuable he is, I forgot to mention, we know, but if we pull on that thread long enough with Huell, it's not just a little incident with a cop. It's the place in the battery, you know, in Chuck's pocket. So, yeah, so there's a lot of – Huell knows a lot. We can't have Huell get caught at all.
Right, exactly. I think it's in their best interest, but they also, you know, want to take care of this guy. So I think that, you know, look, Kim's got a big, high-powered job, which she clearly hates. But, you know, there's plenty of money. And I don't think it was a problem for them. They didn't even worry about it. That was never a concern. You know, it's probably not that much to take a bus. Although taking that bus to I keep saying the name wrong. I wanted to get it right, and I had it before, and Kushada. But I still don't think I'm saying it right. At least I have all the sounds in front of me.
Kushada sounds right. And like any other journey, it's not about the destination. It's all about getting there. Mm-hmm. And that part was fun.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it was great. And I do like the fact that we see Kim back to work. They're just droning on about the office building and Lubbock. And, you know, she just has this look. You feel like she's kind of dead inside.
And I think that's where it clicks for her. You know, when her boss, Kevin, you know, the Mesa Verde boss, is back at it again. Hey, why don't we build an equally large, you know, new bank? And this guy, they're making money hand over fist, and he's obsessing about just what's going on the outside. And just basically what's really creating more work. And even Paige knows that too. So I was kind of glad that Kim shot him down. And Paige, she knew Paige would have her back on that. But more importantly, it just reminded us that moment how much Kim hates that job. She wants to be doing something else.
Yeah, I mean, what that moment says to me is, oh, we could do it. It would be a lot of work. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, she didn't want to do it.
She's like, nah, we just can't. I'm going to have to go ahead and agree with her. And you can kind of see it the way that she's like,
you're getting it done. You're getting it done without me.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody else can do it. And clearly that's where she just comes up with the idea of like, we need to do it again. You know, and I don't think – I love how Jimmy's like, all right, yeah, well, look, we are done with that. Which, of course, when he's saying that, it's like, you are not done with that. But I love your enthusiasm, kid. You're trying. You're trying to go straight. You're trying to get everything on the up and up.
And that's what Vince Gilligan does best, is subverting our expectations, you know. And not just with the – yeah, but obviously with Kim completely wanting to do again and not being mad.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I just love the storyline also because, as we referenced, it's finally just a great moment for Jimmy and Kim this season, which we haven't really had. Early in the season, there were at least some relatively cordial moments, you know, but they have really been off the same page, I guess is the best way to put it, all season. And yes, there was, as Chef from South Park would say, there was some sweet loving. But the fact that they got to that point, and then I do actually love the fact that we come back for, I don't know if that was the last act of the episode, but that we come back from commercial, they're in bed, and the, you know, talking about subverting expectations is, can you handle it again? And she's like, oh, I can handle it again. And he goes into the voice. Which, there are so many things about this that was good. Obviously, Bob Odenkirk, great comedic actor, doesn't get to do comedy in the way he has in so much of his career on this show. But just doing a big, bad, and emphasis on bad, you know, this sort of Creole accent, you know, the, oh, I'm the pastor now. Yeah, you know, and
do it for me, baby, one more time.
Yeah, I know, it's so funny. And That scene right there is just like, just look at them. They're actually happy. They're in the moment. Things have gone their way. And that's the foreboding.
And let me dig a little deeper,
please,
man.
Please dig.
Let's pick a little bit below the surface. We already know about Jimmy's character, but let's talk about Kim. Okay. She's attracted to Jimmy. We know that. And she was originally, it's all we saw in one of the early episodes, how much she admired his brother, how much she admired Chuck,
sure,
he's a great lawyer and all that. So why does she end up with, you know, slick talking Jimmy? And, well, it's slick talking Jimmy, and Jimmy's a slick guy, and he's a hustler, and I think there's something about that that she obviously likes. And I think if we were to maybe dig into, I don't know, psychoanalyze Kim, dig into her family, I don't know, maybe her dad was like some type of hustler, a guy who went to jail or doing thing, but who was kind of charismatic and, you know, had this kind of like slick style and lead people on. And there's something to be said, too, about how we continue these cycles when they say you date the same people, or I date my mom, or women date their father. You know, she's choosing men who are really unavailable to her at a certain point because of what they're doing, something that will kind of like sabotage their own intimacy in their relationship ultimately. Anyway, my psychoanalyzing.
No. I think that all of it sounds good. And yeah, I mean, it's the sort of thing you'd love to dig deeper and be like, yeah, let's find out more about Kim as a person. DJ Beats G in the chat. My heart still breaks for Kim and Jimmy because she's changing and not the Kim he fell for. He needs her stability. She won't survive as a slippin' Kimmy, which I like,
slipping
by the
Kimmy,
way.
Yeah.
I could see her getting busted and locked up. Someone else in the chat predicted, Alpha Q Silly, Kim will end up dead or in jail. We will get to predictions because I think that one of those things is what we're building towards. And if you want a little spoiler for what my opinion is, hey, do we see Kim in Breaking Bad? Do we see her in the future? Anyway, anyway, there's so much to talk about that. And yeah, Robert Kirkendall joins in. Kim is starting to remind me of Walter White.
Everybody's Breaking Bad.
Yeah, there isn't anybody that hasn't. So, and then Super Fromatas says he might break up with her so she does not break bad. But I don't know. I think once you get a taste of that street life, you know, it's
cute street life.
Yeah, right.
Street life.
It's hard to go
only
back.
Life I know.
Anyway, let us know in the chat. You can continue to share your thoughts and comments on that part of the episode. We can move along in a moment. But first, Al, I know that we have an important message for you to share with our viewers / listeners. So pay attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, a quick announcement. Hey, After Buzzers, our network produces after shows for nearly all your favorite TV shows. From dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that works harder to serve their television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube will suggest content that's tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about pesky notifications, don't be, because they're optional. So hit that subscribe button now for this channel and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know you did so in the comments and we'll thank you on air and give you a shout out. For now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us be the ESPN of TV talk.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because in the chat, Mark K says that he always listens to the podcast of our show. This is his first time joining in the live chat. Thank you, Mark. And he says you should change the slogan to the Bleacher Report of TV Talk. But I think ESPN is sort of a bigger brand recognition. That's like if you're saying we're the Coca-Cola of TV Talk. And you're like, why don't you say that you're the Shasta-Cola of TV Talk? But I do like the way you're thinking, and I appreciate
and
you
And to throw on a disclaimer, Christian, by the way, you did yes. a great. You hosted a great show last week without me.
Oh, did
me.
I?
Yes, you did. If you haven't noticed, I wasn't there, but I was heavy in the comments. And we got an actual comment about this being, this new tag of us, AfterBuzz being the ESPN of TV Talk. Yeah. Someone said, I forget the commenter's name.
I forget.
Make sure and don't become SJW like ESPN. I was like, dun-dun. Gotcha. Duly wow. noted. We don't get political here. We have our own political opinions. But this guy was, you know, the Trump show.
Yeah, as you say, you can check out the Trump Report tomorrow at 4 o'clock Pacific. But if even mentioning the Trump Report has you triggered, welcome to the Better Call Saul After Show. It is a safe space. However, watch your wallet, because that's how we roll.
We go up to the line. We might bend the line, but we don't go over it.
Super Curio points out in the chat, the first time Jimmy and Kim hooked up, it was after their first scheme. It was so appropriate that another scheme helped Kim get past Jimmy's issues. Some fresh excitement was what she needed. Sure, and what's always going to happen with this sort of thing is it is going to all come back down to earth when you realize, like, oh yeah, but, you know, you can't always run the schemes. And also, the schemes have consequences, especially Jimmy. He's basically... He's sort of like Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon. He's like this close to retirement. He's this close to coming back. And you're running schemes. He went through all the things, the mail fraud, and, you know, it listed all the things that he did wrong. Anyway, so I think that we can move on from that. But again, if you want to talk about that storyline still in the chat, that's fine. Let's talk about our German friends who get some R&R, and most of them handle it well. And I think that, you know, that Kai is just reminding us that he's not just a problem child. We had the theory from people in the chat last week that everybody who's working on this job is going to end up dead. And I think it's an interesting theory. I try to not look at the world like that, but you know what? I've never been in the employ of Gus Fring. I probably should realize that, you know, let's just say there's not a good retirement program there. So I think that even if that's not the case, this guy Kai is going to get himself killed before the job is done. What do you think, Al?
Kai, or maybe unfortunately Warner.
Well, yeah,
the German.
We'll talk about him in a second. Oh,
okay,
for sure.
I don't want to skip too far.
No, that's right. But Kai in particular, because he's like, you know, he's this close to a run-in with the law, which is like exactly what you need, the kind of trouble you need to stay out of.
And we expected, you know, Kai to be over there grabbing the girls, messing up, you know, and Mike having to go and clean up behind him with the security guard. We almost expect that of Kai. We expect him to get too drunk, but this is the risk that Mike has run by taking these guys from R&R. I agree with the risk, but as we see later on, our friend Warner has a hard time handling his liquor, too.
Yeah, and I mean, what I love is just the way that Mike steps in and, you know, and the guy, the bouncer's like, who are you? He's like, I'm the guy that's going to take care of this. And he just starts peeling off money, and he's like, is the girl all right? This is for her, too, you know? And then, of course, I had the thought of, that girl's never seen that money.
You know? Yeah, that bouncer's
pocketing
money. I'm
just thinking of people who work at strip clubs. Not that I go to strip clubs. It's just, you know, I've seen them in movies, and I think I know that that's how they
operate. And what I saw in movies, paying the guy extra, the manager, I thought that would, you know, bring the party back somewhere. I don't know. I thought the R&R was going to extend beyond the bar, you know? But, hey, that's good enough.
So we were talking about Werner's a little, you know, socialization, and it starts when Mike's still there at the bar. The guy mispronounces Hefeweizen. I think they both mispronounce it, but I guess if the German guy thinks he knows how to say it. So that already was one of those things where, like, you know, what are you doing buying drinks for people? You're like,
and makes it a point to correct him.
Yeah,
like,
there's no reason you have to have this interaction. You are definitely very memorable. We're supposed to be way below the radar. This is not why we're out. This is why we're supposed to stay locked up forever, for all this time. And I think that I had a different theory than you did, and let me know in the chat if you agree with this. I feel like Werner was interested in the Hefeweizen guy, and I thought that when he bought him the drink. And then when we see him back there at the table, and I don't know what the relationship is with the two guys, maybe no one in this equation is gay. I just got the vibe that Werner was trying to sort of leverage this situation by like, oh, yeah, let me talk about what I do best. I'm going to talk about some fancy, you know, design skills. Let me tell you some architecture. And maybe you don't agree with that theory. But clearly he was just being way too familiar with the locals.
And Christian, I'm going to tell you why you hit that exactly on the head, because guess what? Werner wasn't in there with the stripper with the girls. Where was he?
Right, exactly. He did not want to be with the ladies, you know? And I mean, I get it. Look, the strip club was very loud. Mike's not in there either, but that's also because Mike's not there to party.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, so he's drawing diagrams and like discussing like how do you do this big excavation with so much concrete, and he's basically like laying out, you know, their entire plan that's supposed to be like undercover, and ultimately Mike has to come read in the riot act.
Jeffrey Townend, I almost called you Jeffrey Townsend, sorry, Jeffrey Townend, no way Werner is gay, all right, it's my theory, we'll see, we got a couple more weeks, and Super Fromataz, very vocal in the chat this week, I appreciate this, for all that money, they could have rented a suite and gotten strippers to come over instead of going out in public.
Isn't that what I said?
Sure, but the expectation wasn't that they were going to have to spend so much money bribing the bouncer. But yes, absolutely. In hindsight, yes, Werner, Justin Reina points out, Werner said he's married, and this is the first time he's away from his wife. And sometimes when you're out on the road, you know, just you're looking for something different. You go to a strip club, are you going to go for the stripper that looks just like your wife? Probably not. So take it a step further. You have a wife at home. Do you have a gentleman friend at home? No, you don't. So maybe you're interested in something different. Look, these are just theories. It's all right. This is why this show's so much fun, because we're just talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know about the birds and the bees and everything in between, Christian right here, man.
Also, Jeffrey Townsend just chimes in. The older you get, the less strippers interest you. Sure.
I guess so.
But, you know. Let me hope I never get that old. Anyway, the takeaway here is that, as Mike describes it, he has with Werner the come to Jesus moment where he's like, yeah, this can't happen again. Also, I don't think they should do more R&R. Like, this is the lesson learned here. You got this one. We're not going to do it again. You know, I mean, maybe we will bring something in, you know, a magician, you know, something that's less potential for trouble. But I think that, you know, clearly he ran the risk of jeopardizing the whole operation, but Mike stands up for him, vouches for him for him to Gus, and says he's gonna be all right, but always I got my eye on him because Mike's got his eyes on everybody, which is definitely the way to run this kind of operation.
Yeah, and clearly Gus knew about Warner stepping out of line, too. Mike didn't even have to bring it up.
Well, I'm sure that Mike had brought it up previously. You know what I mean? I feel like before they met, he just sort of gave him a report because Mike's there to make sure that Gus knows everything that's happening, any potential problems, and to know that you certainly know that that's happened. You're not going to keep that from him.
And there's eyes and ears everywhere. Even when Mike steps out, they got their bodyguard there. So something's always going to get back to Mike, and something's always going to get back to Gus.
Justin Rainier says he must be into Mike also, too. I mean, Mike's not necessarily his type. He's a handsome fellow, but he's of a certain age, very intense. Some guys aren't into that, all right? So maybe he wants what I understand they call a twink. You know, I don't know. I don't know what he's looking for, all right? Hey, I don't know. He's like, they're out. It's R&R. You got to get back into the
cave. Whatever it takes to keep you focused.
The key point, the takeaway from the end of this, though, is that Mike explains to Gus some of the setbacks that they've had, and that at this point, they're way behind schedule. They're only about the halfway point. So Gus seems to be okay with that, but let's not have anything else happen. Let's not have them fall behind again, which I feel like both of those things are probably going to happen. The idea that there's the rock that's the problem is going to require some blasting. So there's a lot of things that they need to really overcome. And I think it's not at the point where it's trying Gus's patience, but if every time he gets an update, it's, well, now we're even this much further back, these guys are misbehaving even more, I don't think he's going to give Mike too much slack on this. Where do you think Gus is at, sort of, with the assessment of the situation right now?
And along those lines, do we have less faith in Warner as far as, like, we know he's a capable leader and capable engineer, but as far as, like, logistically keeping things on track and keeping things on time, is he a good taskmaster? Maybe we have less faith in him, you know?
Jeffrey Townend in the chat, wedding bells for, let me read these in the right order. Squirrel Egg says, Gus is single. Jeffrey Townend says, wedding bells for Warner and Gus. And now Squirrel Eggs chimes in, I'm shipping those two. Any fanfic, I don't want to read it, but you go ahead and write it and you can, you know, post a link.
It was always my theory that Gus lost his lover in the very beginning. He was murdered by, you know, the big Salamanca, by the big cartel boss. But that's my thing.
Well, there's a lot of theories there's theories to go around. But speaking of Salamancas and speaking of Gus, we should indeed talk about our boy Nacho, which is where the episode starts off. And, he has to get a little bit more hands-on with the handling of the collection. You know, that's the first scene in the episode, I believe. And, you know, it's the guy's payment. Actually, it's not the first thing because we have Jimmy right away, but the payment's a little light, and we're gonna make it better next week. And then Nacho's guy's like, you're goddamn right you are. All right. And then I sit there, so Nacho's like, come on over here. And oh my god, he pulls his damn earring out. I figured he was gonna hit him, maybe do the old slam the head into the desk. No, he pulled the earring out. But the interesting thing, Nacho does that. That guy doesn't flip out. He doesn't freak out. He's like, all right, I had that coming because I need to now make up the money that I didn't pay, and I'm going to have to pay it with interest. It's more like, thank you, sir. May I have another? What do you think about Nacho in that moment?
I love that, and it's also the same message that he delivered to a Crazy Eight, because we see now Crazy Eight's working below him, like where he used to be. And really, he was saying Crazy Eight's the one who to discipline him, because he had to discipline Crazy Eight the first time we see him come back, and he was late or light on the payment. Nacho has to whoop his ass, send him a message. No, you know, it's not personal, it's business. He comes back to work for him, and I think he felt that Crazy Eight should have been the one delivering the message. But it's the same message. And just getting back to the whole Breaking Bad theme, I brought up these two guys. Those characters are very similar to me. Nacho, he used to work for his dad. He loves his dad. You know, he seems like a good kid. He probably got him this drug thing on the side. Same thing as Crazy Eight. We saw Crazy Eight dad owned like a furniture store and used to work for his dad. Gets into hustling on the side, and we see an evolution of both these guys eventually break bad, and it's kind of sad, really. Think about it.
Yeah, so we follow Nacho home. Couple of girls waiting for him. Hey. Throw some money at them. You want to smoke with us? He's not interested. But he's got the girls on the couch who get money thrown to them. So, you know, life can't be all bad, I guess.
Here's some drugs. Here's the pookie pipe. Live it up.
And he looks longingly at some fake IDs for Manitoba, which is indeed in Canada. So, interesting things afoot there. And because I want to make sure we get to news, I'll just sort of pick up where we see Nacho again at the end of the episode. He gets to meet Eduardo. And the interesting thing with Eduardo Salamanca in the kitchen is he's cooking up some food. He offers it to him. And what does he say? He says, "You're going to die." So interesting. Interesting choice of phrase. And Eduardo says, "I'm here to lend a helping hand to make sure the business is running in order. It's going to be like I'm not even here." Meanwhile, it's the loudest scene in the entire episode. Maybe one of the loudest things I've seen on television in months. So what do you think about Eduardo? Do you think that Nacho's not even going to know he's there?
I think that they've been telegraphing this for a long time. Those of you who have been following the internets, there's been this theory about this guy Lalo, and he says it kind of under his breath, but that's his nickname, Lalo, Eduardo. That's who that is. And we'll get in. That's set me up totally for my news segment. We'll get into how that was foreshadowed. But more importantly, what I liked about the scene, though, too, is, okay, who is this guy? Is he one of Gus's guys? Is he Salamanca? Well, the guy says it's, when he's talking about his cooking, says it's a family recipe. And then Nacho goes, "Oh, Salamanca family recipe."
Right.
He's like, bam. So we know immediately who he's from, who he's there, and he's basically there to watch over and perhaps, you know, displace Nacho. Obviously, not a good thing. And his presence is going to be felt, and it's going to be not only a thorn in a Nacho side, but perhaps in a Gus's side, too.
Well, I think that basically, that right there, that's where the episode ends. And because it does tie into the news, and because we have less than 3 minutes, let's get right to the big news segment.
AfterBuzz TV News.
Get into the news, everybody. Oh, real quick, I was in the comments last week. Two things. Shout out to agreeing. I believe it was Corey, a couple of other people, but Corey said, "Al, do the segment, the news segment, where you recap these reoccurring characters." So we're going to continue along
that
theme.
Yeah, we'll get through that through the rest segment of the season. Absolutely.
And also, shout out to the person who told me the word I was thinking was project. When you're thinking of another flaw that somebody else has that you're pointing out, you're projecting. All right, so let me project this onto you right now. Okay, look at if you look at the monitor, we see a picture from episode 8, season 2, where Jess and Walt abduct Saul, and they had the guns on them. Then they're hidden in masks and stuff. And Saul's over there spewing away, trying to save his life. "Don't do it to me. Who are you from? Is it this? Is it that? Is it Ignacio? Is it Lalo? Did Lalo sent you?" And they're like, "Lotto." Guess what, people? I found out that Lotto was short for Eduardo. So at this point, it's already established that Eduardo works for the cartel and that Jimmy has already had interaction with him right there. So that's that unique callback. And then we get to see him in the flesh. And let me just read to you the exact scene when we saw it in Breaking Bad. "And the Lord is worried that this is the end for him. No, it wasn't me. It was Ignacio. He's the one." Saul pleads before switching over to Spanish. When Jesse orders him to speak in English, Saul asks, "Lalo didn't send you?" And when Jesse says no, in extremely relieved, Saul replied, "Oh, thank God." So there was the first foreshadowing of Lalo way back in Breaking Bad, you know, when the Walter and Jesse first hire Saul. And, you know, take us right back to now. It all makes sense.
Right. So so that was the news story for this week?
And a couple other news stories. Here we go. That was the callback segment. And then we got some other good news as far as we had Walter White himself weigh in on Walter White's name, Bryan Cranston.
Right.
He's been very vocal. He's been in the news lately, and he was talking about the most death, the biggest death that affected him has not taken place on Better Call Saul, but was the death of Jane back in the previous episode. That's the death that still haunts him. And we even had another famous director, Guillermo del Toro, weigh in on what's going on in Better Call Saul, in the fact that he feels like there is a greater tragedy in Better Call Saul than in Breaking Bad, because he feels the loss and I guess the sink and the arc into the abyss is much deeper and much tragic.
I think once we've got both shows completely under our belt, let's compare then. But look, the potential is sure it's there. So I guess we'll have to see.
So yeah, we got Bryan Cranston's take on it. And we got director Guillermo del Toro's take on it, and we'd like to know your take on it too. Let's talk about all this.
Yeah, so please let us know in the chat, and we only have a moment really, so let's just go for really fast predictions.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
My question will be, will Kim be alive at the end of next episode? I say no. What do you think? Do you think she makes it to episode 10?
I think Kim makes it to episode 10. Something's tragic.
Season 5?
Yeah, season 5.
You think she'll be in season 5?
I don't know what. I don't know if she's going to be like, you know, in like an invalid or tapping a bell or anything. But I know. I hope. I don't want Kim to die.
We're going to see Saul putting some flowers on the grave in season 5.
But I don't think this is the last we've seen of. Also, just shout out to. Nacho, because his buddy Emilio was the first one that dealt with Jesse Pinkman, and Saul was the one that repped him. So maybe we'll see Jesse Pinkman coming in later on too.
I mean, I don't know that we're going to get. I don't know. Maybe they're saving it for the end of the season. I feel like we'd know, but I guess not. Yeah, that'd be great to see. So here's the thing. We've got 2 episodes left, which means we've got 2 episodes of our show left. We'll be back the next 2 Mondays at 10 Pacific, and that's 10 Pacific, Al, not 9 Pacific. My boy Al G got here a whole hour early, and he'd already finished the episode when I got
here. I was prepared.
That's right. We will be back. We'll be back. Next Monday. Anyway, until then, you can follow me on Twitter or on Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Al, where do people find you?
Everybody can find me at Jamaica House Doc. This is your boy, Al G, a.k.a. Young Street Life. Pass it over to my boy, Young Trump.
That's right. Young Bayou here signing off. We will see you next Monday night. Thanks, everybody.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and Victoria Menounos would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world. And we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals. AfterBuzz TV.